Hey, future people. Brotherhead, a.k.a. Aaron Moss here. Before we get started with today's episode, a little editor's note, I guess. Even though this is coming out in 2023, this episode was actually recorded in 2022. We had the whole start of the new series, season, whatever you want to call it, of Quantum Leap, which we decided to cover. So some of these older episodes got put on hold for a while. We decided to, again, we did the catch-up episodes to catch Michelle up to current day so she can be ready for the new show. And then we started covering the new show. So I'm going to release these other episodes as we can. So let me know what you think. And also the main reason I want to record this is the beginning of this episode, we talk about the court system and there's some rather choice words, which I ended up bleeping out. But this was recorded around the time of the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade and the whole abortion thing. So there may be some comments here, you know, again, listening to this in the future from when we recorded it, you may not quite understand why we may be so opposed to the court system as it is right now and what's going on. That's the reason. This came out, we recorded this right around the same time as the Supreme Court reversed Roe Wade decision. And again, we may not have been happy with the results, but again, we are carrying on. And I just wanted, again, just explain some of these references that we're making in here and why we may be so vocal about the wrong decisions made by the court, in our opinion. So having said that, let's carry on with the Starbright Project. Welcome to the Starbright Project, a Headcast Network podcast about one of the greatest TV shows ever created, Quantum Leap. I am one of your hosts, Aaron Moss. I have been a Quantum Leap fan since 1989. I discovered Quantum Leap through my mother. I was in my room at the time when my mom came in and told me there was a show that I needed to watch since it was about time travel. So I turned on NBC and settled in to watch my first episode. Man, I was hooked. Watched every episode. I rewatched it when it was re-aired on the USA Network, and then later on other channels. Joining me is my wife and co-host, Michelle Moss.
Hello. Unlike Mr. TV...
Hey, I resemble that.
I can't say that I had the same experience. I may have seen 2-3 episodes, and what I did see, I thoroughly did enjoy. When I met Aaron, it was one of those moments that surprised him when I told him that I actually knew of the show. Though, I didn't tell him how little I had actually seen. Here it is 14 years later, and now I'm watching each episode in order, one by one, as if it was a new primetime TV show, and I truly am excited. I do hope my inexperience will bring some nostalgia back to some of the old fans as I relive some of the mysteries and ask some questions you may have once asked back when you took your first leap with Sam and the rest of the Starbright Project crew.
Join us monthly as Michelle and I settle in and watch the entire run of Quantum Leap. I'm the Quantum Leap, I guess, expert on the show.
And I'm going to be the one asking a lot of questions, but hopefully helping reignite people's love for the show through a fresh pair of eyes. And we can experience it together on the Starbright Project podcast.
Welcome to the Starbright Project. As usual, I am one of your hosts, Aaron Brotherhead Moss. And as always, joining me is my beautiful wife, Michelle.
Hello.
Oh, sorry, that's Trina.
Sorry, maybe it's Trina tonight. Who knows?
Hello, everybody.
I think we're in for a fun night.
Hang on, let me give a little more alcohol. Oh, and also joining us from the wonderful land down under is our favorite Australian. Well, one of them.
He just smiled and gave me a Vegemite and a sandwich. He said, I come from a land down under.
Hayden McQueenie.
We know more.
Yeah, and I'm coming to you from the future, the year 2022. And you Americans are coming from the year 1940-something, yes. Apparently.
Well, we have recently set our clocks back to 1938, so.
Oh, well, look, you've got World War II to look forward to, yes. And we've got World War III.
Though if we let our politicians keep at it, pretty soon we're back at the 1800s, so give them time.
I don't know what they're thinking.
They're not.
Idiots.
Well, they only care about life, you know, until it's actually born. Then you're on your own.
Yeah.
You know, they believe in individualism.
Well, as the amazing Lily Allen said, F*** you very much. And that will not get beeped out. That's going to stay.
Oh, no, it's being edited out.
No.
I'm editing that.
No, keep it in.
Keep it in. That needs to keep in.
I love it when you talk dirty, Michelle.
We'll see.
No, it should. That one should keep it in. Just put a fair warning at the beginning of the thing.
We'll have to mark the episode explicit.
That's fine.
Okay.
Just that one.
But anyways, we're not here to talk about the court system.
Or
are we?
Wait a minute.
And I'm sorry, Hayden, for talking over you. Welcome to the show once again.
I'm always feeling very, very welcome.
And yes, as I was introducing our guest, the man from the land down under, Hayden McQueenie. How's it going down there, man?
I'm all right. Just recovered from a pretty bad flu, which has been going around. And at least I've kind of got my voice back now.
Well, good.
Always handy when you got to use it for a podcast, isn't it?
Yes, yes. And at least you're living in the present, not like some of us in the United States. But we've just talked about that. So let's go ahead and move away from the court system and move into the court system. Yeah. This is season 2, episode 9. It's entitled, So Help Me God. And I think a lot of people are saying that today in the last couple of days.
How fitting is that? But, you know, sometimes we actually do really good with the timing of these things and what we're talking about.
It's coincidence. I didn't plan anything out.
But I have to say this, though. It tells you how amazing the show is that you could actually tie some of what's going on in the show, even though it's not about this particular thing. But we can still tie it into what's going on today as it is then, even just the title.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe in the, I was going to say reboot, but that's not right. The continuation that we're getting, we'll hopefully see some of these issues being addressed as well.
Yes, I would hope so. The sequel series.
Actually, some interesting news. Apparently, they're completely redoing the pilot.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah. Apparently, they want to make it easier for newer people to understand. And I get it. I still hope we do get to see the earthquake leap at some point, though.
Why does everybody keep talking about that? I don't understand.
Because they've seen... have they read the script, or was it just... what exactly was they see about the earthquake episode?
Oh, it's an earthquake episode.
Yeah, the original episode was going to be about an earthquake.
Oh, okay. That's where I was confused, because I haven't read anything about it, because I'm afraid to do anything.
Well, you should be. But yeah, so.
Yeah, but look, apparently they're going to be doing some heist, stealing the Hope Diamond, or preventing it, one of the two. So I think it sounds like an interesting premise, and South Park did it first, but they did it well, so hopefully Quantum Leap can do it well as well.
Well, they've got Deborah, so it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so, too.
Yeah, I see people complaining online about my goals with Deborah involved. It gives me confidence.
Yeah. Don as well.
But can I say this being the devil's advocate? And I know I'm going to get a lot of heat for this. George Lucas was involved in Star Wars.
Yeah, but...
but what?
But George Lucas, as I've talked about on an episode of Head Speaks quite a while back, he's a great idea guy.
Shameless plug.
Yes, that's what I do, but on the Headcast Network. But George Lucas has a lot of great ideas. His problem is he's not a great storyteller per se, and a great director, and he needs someone to direct and overwrite him, I guess, rewrite his stuff.
Someone to bounce off.
Yeah, and at this point, when episode 1, 2, and 3, while I enjoyed them, there was a lot of problems with it. I think.
Wait, episode 3. Are we talking about the new ones or the
prequel trilogy?
Ones?
The prequel trilogy. Episode 1, episode 2, and episode 3.
Okay, because you know how I feel.
Well, I know. But by the time he came around to the prequels, if that makes it easier for you.
Yes.
He was George Lucas. And I don't think there was enough or anyone around him willing to tell him no.
So you think that the first original three,
right,
which I call 1.2,
1.4,
2,
you totally misnumbered, but anyways, original three.
Okay, yeah. So you're saying that back when he was not necessarily a nobody, but he was a George freaking Lucas, there was people telling him no, but that was his brainchild. That's what I don't understand.
Right,
like,
but his wife helped rewrite A New Hope, the original one.
Okay. They're not married anymore.
I'm not sure. I don't know his marital status.
It's Hollywood, so I was curious.
And the second one was actually directed by somebody else.
Okay.
Lawrence Kasdan or something like that.
Okay, and not in the new... Oh, wait, no, that's Empire Strikes Back.
Empire Strikes Back was the second one that came out.
And that's like supposedly the pinnacle of
because someone else directed it.
Like, and it's amazing.
Right. And then the Return of the Jedi was directed by somebody else.
Which wasn't the greatest.
Which...
Most people are pretty good. I'm here saying because you're talking to a huge Star Wars girl. I love Star Wars. I love the original three. Amazingly love them.
It's the lesser of the original three. Yeah. Let's put it that way.
Our dog's name is Wicket. I mean,
but
by the way, for all our listeners who can't see this, Michelle's wearing the Princess Leia bikini from when she was enslaved Jabba the Hutt. So.
I'll be posting pictures of later online.
You look like Jabba the Hutt in the Princess Leia bikini, but that's not there.
But yeah, so George Lucas, so someone else directed episode six, Empire Strikes Back. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Return of the Jedi.
Okay.
Then when the prequels came out, George wrote and directed those.
Okay. As George freaking Lucas. Right. Okay.
And I don't think he had enough people telling him no.
Because they're like, well, it's your brainchild. I guess you know.
Well, then he's, I think by this point, he's surrounded by himself by Yes Man and he's George Lucas. So I don't think anyone was brave enough to tell him no. Mm-hmm. So that's why they have the problems they have.
Okay.
I loved in The Simpsons. I don't know if you've seen this little scene, but Lenny and Carl get these huge sticks of uranium and they start swinging them around and battling each other like they're lifesavers. And one of them is like, I say Attack of the Clones sucked more. I say The Phantom Menace sucked more.
That sounds like some people on our Facebook groups we've been reading about. Not to digress, but I was just saying it's Deborah Pratt.
And Donald Bellarosio.
Okay, messing his name up.
Belisario.
Thank you. I don't know what I'm saying Bellarosio for. And I don't know where that came from.
You know how I remember? It's because I am so Sario, I didn't realize who Deborah was.
Belisario. So try that again. Donald Belisario and Deborah Pratt are involved with this. I don't know how much their involvement is, but I do know they are involved. So,
Well, they are producers, and I don't know like how hands-on they will
be. Though. And they had a heavy hand in the original Quantum Leap series.
Yeah, well, they created it.
Well, I mean, even throughout the series, even just creating it throughout the series, they had a heavy hand. In fact, we'll get to that here in just a few minutes when I read the credits on it, but I think Deborah may have had something to do with this episode.
Oh, you think? No.
Looking at my notes here, we may hear her name in a few minutes. But yeah, so that's why I have hope because Donald, and I don't know if it's Donald's a genius or if it's Deborah or both of them, but they both worked on the original series and made it what it is. So as long as they're involved and they have some sort of say and people listen to them, I have faith that this series is going to be a good series.
Well, I do too. I was just saying, being the devil's advocate,
but that's why.
George Lucas had connection, you know, and he's the maker of...
But he had a lot of help with those original movies, so that's why.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That was in my head and just popped in. Hey, it made good conversation, so why not?
But we're not here talking about Star Wars.
That's for another podcast.
We are here to talk about Quantum Leap. I forgot where I was at. So this is episode 9 of season 2, entitled So Help Me God. It was directed by Andy Kadiff. Written by, here it is, Deborah Pratt. The Leap location and date was Louisiana, July the 29th, 1957, which is like about a year or two from where we're at now in the United States. I will get off that. Original air date, November the 29th, 1989. Now, let's go ahead and take a look at the synopsis.
Sam leaps into the body of a defense attorney, Leonard Dancy, just as he is about to enter a plea on behalf of Lila Berry, who is charged with murder. It appears that a plea bargain and already had... It appears that a plea bargain had already been agreed to, but when Sam asks Lila if she did it, she refuses to answer him, so he enters a not guilty plea. The sudden change doesn't sit well with the DA, and also with Captain Cotter, the most influential man in town and the dead man's father. It's 1957, Louisiana, and Sam is appalled at the attitudes towards his client, an African American. The all-white jury is certain to convict unless he can get Lila to tell him exactly what happened, but she is obviously protecting someone. And that was from IMDb.
Not the greatest. No. I wrote a much better one. Well, go to the Quantum Leap Wikia if you want a better plot synopsis.
All right, fine. Let's do that first.
Oh, sorry. No, no. It's all right. That was actually, you know, for the audience.
Oh.
The audience could do that in their own time.
So that was a great job, Michelle. And I'm sure that the Quantum Leap Wiki has a much better synopsis, but we're not going to go into that right now.
I hate hearing when they start out, Sam is in the body of. No, he's not. He's in his own damn body.
The one I pulled was much shorter. It was from Al's Place. Well, the synopsis was, as a lawyer in the Deep South, Sam has to try a case. Yeah, see, it doesn't mention about him being someone's body because
Excuse me for living.
Well, it's not your fault unless you wrote the...
You're starting to sound like a Republican there, Michelle.
No, that would be, excuse me for letting babies live. Or guns, guns, America.
Well, never mind. I was going to make a comment, but I won't.
My dad.
your parents in general.
I know. But I love them.
Someone needs to. Anyway, so this is your first time. Well, actually, for the audience out there, we recorded this once before the great Headspeaks hard drive crash of 2022. So we have recorded this previously. So you've watched this a couple of times now, Michelle.
Yes.
What are your initial thoughts on it?
Not my favorite episode.
Okay. Hayden, would you care to explain a little bit further, or would you either wait or...
Go ahead, people.
Hayden, you've seen this multiple times, I'm sure. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, it's one I always go back to. So it's definitely not as bad as Michelle would have you think. It's a lot better than Thou Shalt Not.
While I didn't dislike Thou Shalt Not as much as you guys did, I agree. This is much better than Thou Shalt Not. This is, like you said, I watched this one multiple times. It's one, like I said, we had to rewatch it again. I'm like, oh, that's fine with me. I enjoy watching this one. So I this is probably my top, at least top 20. It's hard to say because there's so many damn good episodes of Quantum Leap. But
I don't even have a top 20 yet.
Definitely on the positive side rather than the...
Oh, yeah. So
it has a lot going for it.
Oh, yeah. Then go ahead and start, Hayden.
Oh, that means I've got to actually think of some.
Good.
All right. Well, for what I actually really like about this one is this episode did what Thou Shalt Not did not. All right. And that's where, if you are going to really focus in on religion, have it have some payoff for the, like, the narrative for what's actually going to happen. I actually really liked how they were able to essentially figure out what was going on through the fact that people were swearing on a Bible and they don't want to have to lie to protect someone. They just prefer not to say anything at all. And I also like the fact that they were able to use a Bible verse from Galatians to convince Myrtle, you know, to tell Sam what she saw and heard so that they could get a credible witness of what happened and actually prove innocence, you know. If you are going to really focus on religion, then, you know, having it pay off in that sort of way is the best way to do it, rather than just having it look like there's a massive spotlight on a party and then have it have no effect for the, you know, for the rest of it.
Yeah, and I do agree. I do like the fact that they refuse to testify in the Bible, not just because they didn't want to lie, but because, again, they're very religious and...
That's a sin and they can't
help. Yeah, and they didn't want to swear on a Bible and swear to God they're going to tell the truth when they were trying to protect somebody. So they didn't want to lie, but they didn't want to tell the truth either, so...
I don't think it's necessarily that they were worried about lying. It's just the Bible itself is such a powerful part of the Christian faith. And
right.
I know growing up, like, if you said, well, I swear to God... That was like huge. Like you didn't lie about that because, man, if you have the fear of God in you, then you better not use that as a lie. Because, I mean, at least for me, the guilt and the, oh crap, God heard me kind of thing. And so I feel like them putting their hand on the Bible, that was like the closest to God that they're going to get. And to lie over that was worse.
I don't think they would have had a problem putting their hand on the Bible and swearing to tell the truth on the Bible.
No, it was the lie.
That's what I said.
Yeah, they didn't want to put their hand on the Bible. They would not have lied. after they sworn on the Bible. That's the thing. Right. So they, if they had done that, then they would have said what actually happened, and they would have implicated Sadie for her role in what actually happened.
They were trying, that's why they didn't want to swear on the Bible, because either they would have either had to lie, which they refused to do, or they would have implicated Miss Sadie, and that they refused to do that also. Even if it meant that Delilah was going to spend 20 years in jail or even the electric chair, they'd rather do that than implicate an old lady that...
Who's off her rocker.
Yeah, she's off her rocker, but I think it's more than that. I think it's in this community, I think she was probably the nicest person to him. And
but also remember, too, the black girls had virtually no education.
Right.
They don't know how the court system works. They mm-hmm. don't know that even if Sadie was implicated, she would never actually be convicted due to her mental state and the insanity even at the time of what happened, especially because, you know, even if she was in the right mind at the time, she would still not be convicted because it's a justifiable homicide where you kill someone to prevent them from killing someone else. But the girls would never have known that. So they would have thought that she would be going to jail or to the electric chair.
And that's why I think she was nice to him even before that, because that's why they, I mean, if Miss Sadie wasn't such a nice person, I don't know if they would have had such a reluctance to throw her under the bus. So that's why I think, out, you know, especially when some, you know, like Sam said, so many of the women are willing to call them a colored whore and the men call them something worse. I think in that community, Miss Sadie was a saint to them, and even before that, and that's why they didn't want to say what happened, because like Hayden said, they don't understand the law, and they don't understand that, well, Miss Sadie would have gotten off for a number of reasons. Which brings up an interesting question for both you guys, I guess. Do you think Miss Sadie was, as Michelle said, off a rocker beforehand, or do you think it's just the her killing her son threw her mental off, or do you think she was been off for a while?
I think it was because of the trauma.
That's what I was about. Talking about it got me wondering. Michelle, do you have any thoughts on it?
At first, I feel like it was a trauma. But, and that would make sense, because then they wouldn't have such a strong history with her if she... I don't, maybe she was the one that, you know, after they were raped or something, she would clean them up or, you know, help them or whatever. Maybe she was that kind of person. I don't know. But so I'm thinking more than likely it was the trauma, but... kind of wondering now, because she had to have been in her right mind to try to stop somebody from hurting her, if you think about it, for the most part. Because if she was, because I was thinking maybe she turned her eye away from all the other horrible things that were going on in the house. However, why would she defend somebody then? So I think it was from the trauma, but there's still part of me who was like, wonder if she was just a little bit off her rocker to begin with.
Well, I'm sure she turned a blind eye to a lot of stuff that went on.
Yeah.
Just because it was...
Yeah, but she couldn't have done that if she was that mentally...
It's hard to say. I mean, there's different levels of
mental... It's hard to say what you're asking then.
Well, I'm just getting your thoughts. But I just wonder what you guys thought. Because I didn't really think about it until way Michelle phrased it. I'm like, was she crazy beforehand, or was it... And I kind of agree with you guys. I think most of it was from the trauma of killing her own son.
But there may have been... like mental illness comes in varying levels, and people do have varying levels of clarity at different times.
Right.
So it might have just been on that particular day when she was helping Lila to get away, which she was really having a great moment of clarity and seeing everything that was going on. But then who knows what, like you said, what she would have been like at other times.
Right. We didn't get any
proof either way.
Yeah. Clarification of how she was beforehand, other than the way her husband treated her with kid gloves. But then again, is that just because did he know the truth about what happened and he was just trying to blame the black girl?
Well, look at how they treated Sam's wife. Honey or whatever her name is.
Shogi,
there we go. I mean, they kind of treated her like, oh, sweetie pie. You know, like they were really kind of baby-ish with her too. But kind of... thinking a little bit more on that question, I wonder how much maybe she was mentally having issues, because maybe that's one reason why they were trying to protect her so much. Because she was a little bit off, and because she was a little bit off, she spent more time with them, loved on them, cared for them, and in return, they felt like they had to protect her because of the fact that she was a little touched.
And it's sad. I mean, I could see where you're coming from, definitely. I just find it funny that... the person that's mentally, that's possibly mentally touched or whatever, however you want to phrase it, was the only one that was being kind to these ladies. Which really says something about the South in the 50s and 60s and
not just the South,
2022 and the entire United States. But that's, I guess I'm not getting on that tangent again.
I have to say, I actually do really like Sam's use of logic in this episode, actually, because he's the one who straight away figured out there has to be something else going on because of the fact that the town treats Lila and the black population so badly. Right. They would have been perfectly happy to chuck her in the electric chair. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, I'd love one. It's freezing at the moment, but
you want to come
so to why? Our why would like they go hundreds. And let her plea herself out unless you know someone actually did know that you know she was protecting Sadie?
That's the reason it made me think maybe that the colonel did know something because. If they let her, because he was one of the ones behind trying to get her to plead out, and if she pled guilty, well, there's no trial and no investigation. But if a good lawyer looked into it, as Sam did, he's not even a lawyer, but they'd be able to find out that there's something else going on. And
well, with that being said, though, I posed a question to you while we were watching it, which was how much... So he looks into her eyes, and he knows right away that she's... not guilty. You know I can't stand that crap because I'm just like, no, like, so did Leonard feel that way? Did he not? I mean, okay, yes, he used bad language. My thing is, if the...
You're asking if Leonard thought she was innocent?
Yeah, well, if did the guy actually feel like he was innocent and that was some knowledge that was sent on to Sam because he loved it?
I think I know what you're asking now. Are you saying that Sam might be feeling something from the Lee P?
Yes.
From the mind merging? Yeah. No, I don't think that. Because originally Leonard did plead her guilty.
Really ticked off when he comes back and his...
Well, originally Leonard did plead her guilty. So Leonard obviously either thought she was guilty or wanted to follow her own wishes. So
I don't think it was either one of those. I think it was just he was following what the colonel told him to do.
Well, that too.
That's
also,
what I think.
To follow what you were saying as well, Aaron, I actually didn't think it was ever in any doubt that the captain knew that Sadie had been the one to shoot Houston because he's the one that made the black girls swear that they wouldn't tell anything and said, you know, If I say what's going to happen, then I'm going to go to hell.
Yeah, forget about that. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So I think it's pretty clear that the captain knew exactly what was going on. And he should be charged with obstruction of justice, by the way.
It's not going to happen.
I don't think he ever would be, but yeah, I think
he's a rich white guy in the South.
Yeah, exactly.
And Republican.
I mean, it's not like anyone would care that, you know, Lila had been put through hell. But anyway.
Especially in the 50s in the South.
Yeah. Look, I actually don't mind the fact that Sam saw the truth in Lila's eyes. Actually, it made me think a little bit, you know, the timing of this leap seems pretty horrible for Sam. I mean, he's got no information about what's gone on and he has to make a plea immediately. But if you actually think about it, that's the only way it could have actually happened. Because if he'd leapt any earlier, he would have gotten the information and come to the conclusion that Lila was guilty because she confessed to it and because she wasn't putting up any fight. And if he'd leapt in any later, it would have been after the plea and he wouldn't have been able to do anything. So that was really the only time where he could leap in and make that snap judgment. And thankfully, it was the right one.
Unless he leapt in and saw it happen.
Well, that's an interesting thing. He could have leapt in and, you know, maybe into, what's his name, Houston, and prevented him from beating up Lila, and, you know, that would have prevented the whole thing. But then we wouldn't have an interesting story, would we? But yeah, you're exactly right, actually, Michelle. This happens quite a lot in Quantum Leap, where Sam often has to try and figure out what's happened, you know, leaping in too late to save someone. It makes you think, why didn't he just leap there to save them? So
that's part of God's plan, or God, fate, time, whatever.
GTF dubs.
But...
Yeah. But no, well, apparently Houston had to die. So.
Well, honestly, I never met the man, but he sounds like a person that needed to die. But that's my own editorial onto it. But no, there's been several episodes we've talked about this where Sam, you know, Sam leaps in at the most inopportune moment, like when the leapt into the piano player and he landed in and he had to do the, you know, the whatever it was.
Chopsticks.
He had to play again. And again, if he leapt in sooner or later, it wouldn't have been that bad. In that case, it wouldn't really mattered. It would have probably been, not mattered, it would have been more beneficial for him to land in a few minutes later. But yeah. Like you said, yeah, this case here, yeah, this was the best for Lila anyways, the best time for him to leap in. Because, yeah, like you said, if he'd been left in soon enough, Al could have came in and said, well, no, she pleads guilty and she has 20 years. That's all you need to do.
Yeah. And it's interesting, too, because when Al shows up, he's completely useless because they've been running scenarios and couldn't figure out why he was there.
Well, they knew why. He's supposed to play Rhett Butler.
No, they didn't. No, they had no idea. He's like, and Sam says, well, I'm obviously here to prove Lila innocent. And Al's like, no. She pleads guilty, gets 20 years. She's fine. And they never even considered that that was supposed to be what Sam was there to do. So it really wasn't until they actually got into the trial where Al actually was of some use. Oh, what I liked in this one too, for once, Al hadn't done this before, and neither had Sam. Neither of them are lawyers. Yeah. But of course, they've got the whole world's library of law at the tip of their
fingers. Right, but so yeah, the one thing that Al really, hasn't done in the previous
didn't
life.
Really hurt.
And let's make it a point to say that he does have a law degree.
Yes.
Yes.
Law is not one of his 6, 7, whatever degrees he has.
One of his many degrees.
Yes.
Yeah. Double and not one of Al's either.
Yeah. And but apparently has plenty of Perry Mason under his belt. Mm-hmm. I like that. He's like, thanks. I can't remember some lawyer show. I can't remember the name of it. And then Al pops
up. Oh, hey, it's Perry Mason.
He's like, oh, thanks.
Oh, that's it.
One thing I really liked in this episode was when they were talking about the jury and Sam's like, they're trying to, you know, find a way to disqualify or whatever. Sam's like, well, there's no black people on this jury or persons of color, however he phrased it.
And needs to be a jury of your peers.
And, you know, first he's like, well, maybe they're going to get off because there's, you know, no black people. He's like, well, that's fine, but there's no registered black voters. And Sam, like in a moment of like quickness, like, okay, I understand that. Well, then I guess we have no option but to reluctantly accept these white jurors as Lila's equal.
Papa will love it.
I love the way he phrased that, though.
Yeah.
Because I mean, he could have phrased it a different way and made it less offensive to the white jurors. But yeah, he played it, you know, very much. Well, I guess we're going to have to accept these white jurors are equal to Lila, which, you know, I thought, especially in the South, probably didn't make him any friends, but it was a very nice touch.
The quote is, well, with that being the case, Your Honor, since the law requires a trial by jury of one's peers, we have no choice but to reluctantly accept these white jurors as Lila's equals.
Yeah, I love that line. That every time that line comes up, I sit there in anticipation for it because I love the way he phrases that. And I love also, the thing I really love about this episode is the look on Sam's face when everyone calls her a Negro or the N-word or, you know, talks bad about her. He's just, you can see that it really gets under his skin and he wants to punch somebody in the face. Whether it be the colonel or his wife or whoever it is, it's just, which to me shows Sam's character without actually saying anything about it. I mean, you just, the way Scott Bakula acted it out, you can see that, you know.
You're going to give that colored hog my chicken? She'll have it.
Another.
Love those lines.
Another TV nod from Sam was, it says, in trying to get court documents from the DA, Beau Parsons, Sam calls Sheriff Dixon Sheriff Lobo, referring to the corrupt sheriff from BJ and the Bear, which first aired in 1979. Nothing
better than a show about a man and his monkey.
The only thing I know about Sheriff Lobo is that Homer Simpson.
I don't know it at all.
Yeah.
Well, again, I was born in 69, so I was there and I watched that show. And it's about a man and his monkey.
Then why does it say bear?
If I'm not mistaken, that was the monkey's name.
Really?
If I'm not mistaken, it's been it's been decades since I've seen it, but I believe that was the monkey's name was Bear. And they fought against the corrupt Sheriff Lobo.
Did they ride in a big rig?
Maybe. I don't remember offhand. It's been years. You're thinking that or Every Which Way But Loose.
Oh, yeah.
Or Every Which Way. There's Every Which Way But Loose, Every Which Way, something else with Clint Eastwood. Clint Eastwood was a truck driver with his monkey.
Orangutan?
Orangutan. Monkey orangutan, whichever.
I faintly remember that, and I think I liked it, and my mom hated that I liked it. Because I loved things that my mom hated.
Do you know what we call redheads here?
Gingers.
No. Rangers.
That's horrible.
After orangutan.
Yeah, BJ and the Bear is about a younger guy with his pet monkey.
Okay, yeah, I don't remember that.
But anyway, I was just trying to think. You were also talking about people's personalities coming through, and it's pretty obvious that Houston got a lot of his manner, you know, his personality. And
from his dad?
From his dad, yeah. Because the dad's talking about how he liked, you know, watching her bent over with her dress riding up while she's scrubbing
knees.
The floor.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Doing McNasty.
And as we know now, you know, Houston had been raping her since she was 14.
Yep.
She phrases it as she let him because she didn't want to have to go back to the bayou. But we obviously know that, you know, he'd been raping her for all that time. And we don't know how old he was either. Chances are quite a lot older. So, yeah, it was pretty clear that the disrespect of women, you know, started very, very long ago. And has those attitudes have just been, you know, trickling down over the generations and, you know, not all disrespect leads to violence, but all violence does come from disrespect.
A lot of places are saying that it was kind of a take on To Kill a Mockingbird, too.
Yep, I can see that.
Yeah. In a lot of the shows, I find you can reference something else just because there's so many themes out there that you can tell different ways and still tell an entertaining story.
Yeah, and we do seem to find as well with Deborah's writing in particular, she does really make it overt what her inspirations are for what she writes.
Right.
We saw that when we did watch the trilogy and the fact that she was so heavily inspired by The Bad Seed.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously this one very heavily inspired by To Kill a Mockingbird. But anyway, Michelle, you were saying that you didn't like this episode very much, even though, you know, most of what you've been saying has been coming across very positive. But
it's not that I despise it, Pig Farmer, but it's just not one of my favorites. It's one of those, I'm not a big heavy topic person. I don't, Aaron knows this because I'm like, even anybody who, and I'll say it again, anybody who offers me to watch the show, first thing I tell them is it going to make me feel? I don't want to feel. I just want to watch and be entertained and feel numb when I watch it. This was one of those where I don't like the topic, and it's not that I don't like the topic as far as not being against what's going on, because I'm glad that it was shown. I'm glad that it's in the light. I'm glad people are talking about it. I'm very much for all of that. I feel like this kind of did that, but I will say that it did it for a reason, and I understand that, and I understand that the topic is there, and it's part of history. And some parts it's still repeating itself, but I don't even know how to word this without it just sounding stupid, horrible, and just lame. But it's just not, it wasn't my cup of tea. I don't like rape. I don't like racism. I don't like courtroom stuff. So it's just not one of those episodes that's like I enjoyed.
Yeah. So it's more the subject matter rather than the, like, how it was.
No, it was, yeah, no, the storytelling was great. The acting was great. The content, the way it was written, the way the story flowed, everything was great. It's not an episode I'd want to go back and rewatch because it entertained me, I guess you could say. I'm glad it was there. It's over and done with. I'm ready to move on for a new one, kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, part of your feelings might be because we have watched some episodes out of order. I mean, this is the first one that we've had about a courtroom, but because we watched the trilogy already, especially the third part, which also has a very similar sort of courtroom scene.
Well, plus we've watched this one a couple of times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I didn't care for it the first time we watched it either, so.
But in her, I'll say defense, Your Honor. Oh, yeah, she's not a big courtroom type person that likes watching, where me, I enjoy Law and Order and things like that. So that's one reason I think I enjoy this one so much, is because I do enjoy the courtroom settings. And no, I just love the way Sam was in this one. I just, the way, you know, he's, you see a lot of Sam's character in this.
Another quote, I found another memorable quote, and it says, the best Ziggy could come up with is that you're here to play Rhett Butler, Al. No, no way. Tell Ziggy to shove that.
Yeah, I love it. As I say, so they knew why he was supposed to be there. He's supposed to be able to play Rhett Butler.
Yeah. Something that struck me in this episode was you could tell it was early on because they hadn't established a whole lot of the lore yet, or lore, as you'd probably say it.
We say lore.
Well, the reason that I say that is it's pretty clear that Sadie's not in her right mind. She should have been able to see Sam as Sam.
Oh.
Because we've seen in, like in the trilogy, you know, mm-hmm. the mother who was in the insane asylum, she could clearly see Sam as Sam. And she told Sam, you know, I remember you from all these years ago. You came and saw me and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
Yeah. So, but I do think that like Sam was able to see the innocence in Lila's eyes, Sadie also probably was sensing that something was off about Sam. Maybe it wasn't to the point, you know, where she's completely snapped and can see him properly, but she was saying, you know, he looked haggard and
right.
You know, there was definitely seemed like she was noticing something off about him, but couldn't really put her finger on. So maybe they were kind of alluding to it.
And that's what I was wondering. Maybe
intentionally or not intentionally.
And maybe it's the degree of your insanity maybe can affect it, or because we know there's other things besides that can affect it. Spoilers for future episodes. We'll put a pin in that and come back to that later on. But so we do know there's other things that will affect how people see Sam. So maybe if you're mentally unstable, it depends on the degree. And or like you said, maybe they just didn't have that down yet.
I think that's more likely.
Yeah, I don't know much of this was written down beforehand. And Dawn and Deborah said, well, this is what you need to follow. From some of these episodes.
I think the first time they explicitly state that the mentally absent will see Sam and Al is Shock Theater, which is the final episode of season 3. So there is quite a lot of time before then. So it seems pretty clear they just hadn't, you know, established all the rules yet.
I forget right offhand, when was the Hurricane episode?
That was early season 4.
Was that 4? Okay.
Yeah.
But, okay.
So there's... Yeah, so, I mean, they hadn't established it yet, and you can tell that because if it had been later on, then they would have made it that Sadie would be seeing Sam and wondering, you know, who is this person who showed up that I've never seen?
But, yeah, I do agree that, yeah, if this was a later episode or if they would have had a Bible written out for everyone to follow, but as we can see from different episodes previous to this, there's a lot of things that weren't written out or explicitly stated until later on, so...
I think so as well. All right, but yeah, I thought this was a very, very well-acted episode as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Kathleen Noon, who played Sadie, I mean, she plays that, you know, woman who's just had a massive trauma and is in, you know, away with the fairies so well.
The crazy-eyed look.
Yeah. Lila, I just love Lila's attitude in this. You know, when she's smoking away in the cell and he says, you shouldn't do that. Wow, think it's going to shorten my life?
Yeah, very much so. Just,
I loved her attitude all the way through. And also Keddie Lester, who played Myrtle. By the way, I don't know if you know this, but she's actually a singer. She made music back in the 60s. And she's still alive.
Oh.
Yeah. So, but yeah, when she's talking, describing to Sam about what she heard during the altercation between Houston and Lila, when she's describing after he'd been shot and that he had no face and just the look of terror on her face as she was saying it, and oh, so well acted.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, she did a great job. Well, I say most of the cast did a great job at what they were doing.
I will say also that they did a really good job of capturing the summer heat and how everybody was really hot. Like, that was a neat attention to detail.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, I think so too. Well, this aired in November, so they probably filmed it a few months in advance. It probably was stinking hot in summer at the time. So, but if not, then kudos to them. They can act themselves hot. But no, I thought that was very, very good.
Oh, interesting side note. Miss Keddie Lester? Am I pronouncing that right?
Keddie Lester.
Yeah, Miss Myrtle. She was also on, again, it's only important to me, she was on some episodes of G.I. Joe back in 85. Interesting.
And William Chalart, how do you, whatever, played the father in the Patty Duke show.
Oh, cool.
And
yeah, I knew that. I've seen him in that.
But I'm reading. It's from the MacGyverProject.blogspot.com. And it says, one problem that I had with the show was the timing. The murder took place on July 15th, 1957, and the courtroom was called to order July 29th, 1957. 2 weeks is a short time to prepare for a murder trial, even if the defendant is supposed to plead guilty. But that's not my main problem. If Delilah was beaten so badly that Houston Cotter almost killed her, how did she heal so quickly? It can take weeks for bruises to fade.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I can buy the short time.
Well, especially if they're African American, they don't care. They're just going to try him and convict.
Yeah. Look, I can buy the short time as well because of the fact that they are doing a plea deal and because of the fact that she is going to plead guilty. I actually saw it not so much as the trial, but as the committal hearing, where they're determining if there's enough evidence to and get the pleas to determine if it is going to go to trial. So I didn't have a problem with that, but the person who wrote it is exactly right. She should be pretty bruised up. Yeah, but you are right. I actually think that this leap probably took a lot longer than is we're expected to believe, because that trial would have taken a long, long. And like you said, it wouldn't have started straight away. Actually, we do see issues like this in quite a lot of them where we do have courtroom scenes. There's another episode. Should I name it?
I don't think it hurts giving the name.
The name of the episode is Raped, and that one also has lots of problems with the timing, especially when it comes to the... So, yeah, I think they like to take a bit of liberty to try and make it an entertaining hour of television rather than making it as realistic as possible.
Well, I think that's wrapped it up for that one. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think we've covered just about everything on this one. So help me God.
Thank you for listening to the Starbright Project. Join us monthly as we continue leaping with Sam and Al. If you like the show, I recommend buying Quantum Leap on Blu-ray. You can also watch it on the NBC website or app. The only thing on this show that Michelle and I own are our thoughts and opinions. NBC Universal own the rights to Quantum Leap, and any songs that we use are owned by their respective owners. Any clips we use, we're using good faith for the show. I know this doesn't excuse us legally, but we just want NBC to sue us. We're just big fans of the show and want to share that love with the world. For more podcasting goodness, check out the other shows on the Headcast Network. Head Speaks is released on the first Tuesday of the month, where I talk about comics, TV shows, movies, books, whatever I want, but it's usually geek-related. G.I. Joe, Aurora Mutkin Headcast, is normally out the second Tuesday of the month, where a rotating batch of guest hosts and I discuss the G.I. Joe comics and cartoons from the 80s. The third Thursday brings us Task Force X, where I talk about John Ostrander's Suicide Squad and Paul Kupperberg's Checkmate comics, both from the late 80s, early 90s. Finally, the fourth Tuesdays of the month, we have the Starman Manhunter Adventure Hour, where I examine the Will Payton Starman comic and the Mark Shaw Manhunter comics, again, both from the late 80s. Then on Thursdays, I release my second batch of shows, where Michelle shows up on most of them. The first Thursday of the month, I'll be releasing the Starbright Project, a Quantum Leap podcast, where Michelle and I look at the greatest time travel show in the late 80s and early 90s. Then the second Thursday of the month, look for Retrospect of the 80s. You guessed it, Michelle and myself take a time travel trip back to the greatest decade that was, in my opinion. The third Thursday will possibly, maybe bring another show, Voyager's Cast, where Michelle, I, and some guests look at the best time travel show from the early 80s. And finally, on the fourth Thursday of the month, I have Bravo Team, where myself and possibly some guest hosts talk about anything G.I. Joe related, not covering the main G.I. Joe show. Also, if you like what I'm doing, please check out my Patreon page at patreon.com/headcastnetwork. If you're enjoying my shows, throw a few bucks in the bin. It'd be most appreciated. But that'll do it for this episode. Join us next time to see where Sam ends up.
Oh boy.